Is that the right one there?
So my job on this panel was to be the sweeper and try and say everything that wasn't said. And so I can just stand here and smile and gaze at you for 15 minutes because I think that everything was so beautifully covered by Stacey and Oscar that actually I don't have that much more to add. But as a physician or a health provider, we have a nutritionist here, but I guess as a primary care health provider, I'm going to try and give you a perspective on this that's a little bit different in terms of how can we make some changes, both perhaps one-on-one with patients, but also much more importantly in the community. And since today has been really focused on systems and looking at holistic ways of making changes, I thought I would start off with this diagram that really shows the different aspects of nutrition and how they surround us as a, let's say, a nuclear family or a community. Everything from the media to the way we are introduced to it in our healthcare systems, through farming that we just heard about, through schools and restaurants, public venues including parks and so on, food stores, packaging. I'm sure I've left some things out as well. But these are really all different touch points where we have an opportunity to make a change. And with hospitals and clinics, I'm also including their one-on-one work. So I put this together yesterday evening, and one of the nice things about coming at the end of the day is you get to learn from all the other speakers. And Wayne Jonas actually really inspired me, so I went ahead and changed it to this. Because I really think that this is much more what it looks like. And the interpersonal is the family, and the inner is us. And then, you know, all these other different exposures are up there, and eating is somewhere in between. That's the behavior. But as we know, that is just sort of the outcome of all these other changes. But let me start up there in the yellow. And what I'm going to do in the next 12 minutes is talk to you about these various domains for change, and put out some ideas that I have, but it's only one idea. And what I'm most interested in is sparking your ideas, because there are many ideas out there for each one of these things. So let's start with labels. There is nowhere that is more overwhelming, as Stacey said, more of a quagmire, more of a frightening event than walking down the aisle of your conventional grocery store. I mean, I have patients who are PhDs, who are, you know, and that tell me that they can't even begin to decipher a label, much less someone who might have an elementary or just high school education. So our labeling system, which is so poorly controlled by the FDA and which is really all intent to sell products, is not working. And we have to think about how are we going to help our patients navigate this? Well, one way is to get involved in organizations which actually are involved with labeling. The other way is to sort of just tell our patients, you know, what kind of labels they should respect. So these are the kinds of labeling I would like to see. That's not too complicated, is it? And, you know, what I started doing is keeping packages in my office or examples in my office the same way that nutritionists used to, but really just what, showing people what food is. Never mind what to eat. This is real food and this isn't real food, okay? And it can make it very, very simple. So this is something that was put out recently. Has anybody seen this? It's a new program, We Can, by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, funded by our government. Wonderful idea, because apparently these kinds of things work with people. You can tell them what are go foods, slow foods, and woe foods. And, you know, we found that this works with asthma. You know, you can tell patients when they're in the green zone, the yellow zone, the red zone. These kinds of simplistic education things really work. I'm sorry if I'm bouncing around back here. I don't do well behind podiums. I usually pace. Anyhow. So this is a new system that's been put out, very inspirational for a lot of schools. They've adopted it. It's made its way into a lot of different legislation and so on. Now, this kind of makes sense, okay, if you have this as go. Oh, yeah. What did I do? I just killed it. That's it. So I will keep on talking while David's going to save me here. So, you know, go foods on the bun. That's perfect. That's for David.
You want a back one?
What?
You want a back
one? Oh, exactly. Okay. So, so go foods on the bottom, you know, slow foods. Maybe you want to eat a little less of the turkey than the fruits and vegetables, the full-fat yogurt. But still, you know, find that you don't want to eat as much of the full-fat yogurt as you're eating of the other two things. Well, unfortunately, this is what that has. If you read that document, these are what are in the go, slow, and woes, okay? So we need to start to create our own food pyramids for our patients. The same way we have food and no food, you know, you sit there and you talk to your patients, you get the list of foods they like to eat, and you can help them construct their own personalized food pyramid. And that's something that I get very excited about doing. But, that, you know, once again, if you want to get involved on a larger level, go tell the folks at National Lung, Heart, and Blood that they have it wrong. But, you know, you don't need a degree in nutrition to know that this is not right, okay? And I'm not sure how these things happen. Stacy can tell us later. She's out there fighting this too. So this is another study just published at Yale. Who's seen this study? Okay, well, this study is exactly what Oscar just told us. It turns out that if you have a cartoon character on your food and you're a kid, you're going to like it more even if it's the exact same food, okay? It doesn't matter if it's a bag of carrots. It doesn't matter if it's a graham cracker. It doesn't matter if it's gummy fruits. So the carrot industry has decided, I will just put cartoon characters on everything, and that's how I will sell food. I quickly decided you should just not let kids watch cartoons. But, you know, I'm putting it out there as this other idea. I'm going to let you guys respond to it and think about it. So once again, where do you do your work? Where do you do your advocacy? Or do you just paste cartoon characters all over your office with healthy foods? I don't know what the answer is. So, menu labels, another big new experiment. And actually, there are some studies out both in New York and in Washington State. And here is the results of the one in Washington State, which I actually personally believe is a little better study because it was just it was controlled for menu price, which is important. Because if you're spending more on your food, chances are you're slightly more educated, slightly, chances are that maybe you're eating lower calorie meals and so on. But what this did show, controlling for price, and I don't want to push the scary button again. Which one was that I pushed? See, this is not, okay. Oh, no, I did again. See? All right, where's the L? I don't know what the, okay, so if you've seen that, what you said. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a little confused here. Not only am I stuck behind a podium, but I have a dysfunctional pointer. So you can see that there was up to a 50% reduction in calorie consumption in some of these places. Now, if you're going out and getting your 2,000 calorie meal, and that's actually pretty significant all of a sudden. You know, we're talking a decrease of 1,000 calories per day. Now, if you're extremely obese, I don't know how much of a difference that's going to make. And we don't have the data yet to see exactly what the outcomes are in terms of weight. But this is kind of interesting stuff and kind of promising. It inspired me enough to approach our local tea room and get her to put one of my food items on the menu, and she's actually told me that it's become a very popular item. So I'll share it with you later if you're interested. So this is the second part of that study, and this is a little bit more sobering, and that is that you see that a lot more people understand the information from the menu labeling than those who actually changed their behavior or chose lower calories. So just that is sort of the part two of this. Food stores. Oscar just talked about this. Another wonderful opportunity for change. If you go into a lot of the food stores in the neighborhood where Oscar works, which is a really very low-income area within Marin in the Canal District, or if you go into the Mission or parts of Berkeley or Oakland where I live, this is what greets you at the front door. If it's not the cigarettes and the alcohol, it's this. and what traditionally used to be there and what you should be seeing is this. So another opportunity just in terms of arranging things. So I'm going to talk about farming, and this is kind of selfish because, as you can see, that's me on the tractor. I just spent some time on a farm, and there's probably no better way as a health provider, as Stacy will tell you, to get to understand this stuff than to be there yourself. And I actually did an internship at a biodynamic farm for a couple of weeks in eastern Washington and learned more than I did in 4 years of medical school. But anyhow, this is actually more learned more about medicine than I did in 4 years of medical school. But connecting people with their local farms is obviously a huge part of this. This is the Berkeley Farmers Market, and this photo is actually courtesy of the Berkeley Farmers Market. Here is a farmers market where people from many different backgrounds, both cultural, socioeconomic, come together to buy food, where you can use food stamps in WIC programs to buy food. Now, Berkeley is a total bubble. You have to understand we don't really exist on planet Earth, but it is a pretty amazing place in terms of that. This is another farm that I visited out in the Snoqualmish, where I worked in eastern Washington, and it's Clean Greens. And it brings food down to Seattle, to southern Seattle, to a very low-income, mainly African-American community. And the farmers who grow it on the food on the food on the farm are actually linked with a church there. And it's really quite an amazing program. That's Tom, the farmer. Christine is one of the volunteers in front. And they're loading it on a truck, the greens, to bring it in. Here's more of the greens. Now, these aren't they don't do it, fancy and prune everything and make it perfect, but they charge a lot less, and they bring it to the farmer's market, and it was amazing. The stuff was gone within an hour. Here, that's Venice. She's Tom's wife, and little Cy, who's their grandson, who helps work on the farm, and it's a pretty amazing place. This is Spiral Gardens in Berkeley, which is actually sort of this urban iteration of that, grows its food right on the corner of MLK and sells it right there. And this is La Mesa program, which I'm sure Oscar is familiar with. It's down in San Jose, where actually people come and will put farmers' little boxes and gardens in people's backyard, and they can grow cilantro, and it's really changed other kinds of greens and start to cook more indigenous recipes. I just want to take one last second here to talk about, I'm almost finished with the circle there, I promise, but you have to give me a couple moments for technological failure. This is a program now shifting over to the healthcare side, which is Healthcare Without Harm. How many of you are familiar with that organization here? Wonderful, wonderful. So this is an organization which in many different respects tries to green healthcare, but part of their program is really to bring locally grown food into hospitals themselves and also to bring farmers markets on to hospital grounds. Now, Kaiser is doing a very similar program, and as a matter of fact, Kaiser has a study right now with CHF patients, with the congestive heart failure patients, where they're discharging with them with a box of vegetables instead of an extra dose of digoxin, and seeing how they do in terms of readmission rates. And it's really, it looks pretty promising. Public venues, and this is something I'm actually very involved in, is just sort of public lands and parks in general. But it turns out that we have millions of visits to public land each year. Way more people go to public lands than go to doctor's offices. So this is a great opportunity to make change. And so just simple things like taking vending machines that sell Coca-Cola and chips out of public parks and substituting in those carrots with the, Scooby-Doo on them, can make a difference. And finally, edible education. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this because Stacy did such a great job, but we actually have our first data out from the Edible Schoolyard in Berkeley. This is my son's school. This is Willard School. It's a middle school in Berkeley. This is the actual makeup of Willard School. It's 45% socially disadvantaged, huge range ethnically. And yet, these are some kids working in their garden. This is their worm bin. There they are in the edible schoolyard kitchen. And yet, when they actually started to look at outcomes from the Edible Schoolyard Project, and this is partly funded by the Center for Eco-Literacy, partly by the Shape and Youth Foundation, but UCSF is involved in this, what they showed was that it really, the kids who had been involved in the program really did have a substantial change both in their behaviors and their knowledge base. So very exciting stuff. I'm going to skip over this because Stacy did such a great job of it. This is a farm school that I was involved in when I was up in Washington. The one thing that I will tell you is that this farmer said to these kids, let's go see what's under that sheet. And they went and they looked, and they were daikon radishes. And can you imagine getting kids to sit there and eat a spicy daikon radish? Because it was so exciting. They found it under the sheet. It's exactly what Stacy was saying. The discovery. And now these kids are going to eat daikon radishes for life. You know? And this I can't show you. It's a great little video of Cy, the grandson on the Clean Greens farm. Now, finally, this is my last slide, and just a reminder, this, I know there's one person in this slide that looks slightly different than the rest of them. My last project involved traveling around to different cultures and really learning very valuable take-home lessons, and these are from places that still have low rates of obesity and chronic disease that we all suffer from. And the lesson is just so embodied in this picture. This is a family that eats together every evening. Fujiko-san, who's in the back, who's over 70 and swears she still doesn't dye her hair, makes these okazu, these little meals, you know, and the whole family sits down and eats them together. And there is just, that is really where all of this begins and ends and where we really need to work with our patients.